punch this and say, this is Jan Blodgett with, and how do you want to be known? BJ or Betty J?
Betty BJ Caldwell.
Betty BJ Caldwell on Thursday, September 8th, 2016, at the Rosenwald School in Huntersville, also known now as the Torrance Lytle Community Center.
Right.
So let's start first going back in time.
Okay.
So where were you born?
I was born in a little shack on the corner of Eastfield and Alexandriana Road. In 1946, I was born at home, midwife. My mom and dad lived, well, my mom was from this area. My dad was from Cornelius, North Carolina. They met while both worked at the TB Sanatorium in Huntersville because it was an employing mecca for people of color, Negroes during that time. Because you could be assured of a job, whether you were male or female, or nurse. If you were male, they had a boys' home that you could live there. And a lot of the women could kind of live with people in the community. So that worked out. I'm not sure how that worked, but there were women there too, but they didn't have a place for the women to live. I don't remember it being that way. But anyway, that's where I was born. And I never shall forget. In 1951, 52, I was brought to this school here. This is a Rosenwald school, and it has lost its designation because the windows have been altered. And hopefully somebody will come along and put the windows back so we can keep our Rosenwald school. And I was vaccinated in the back. You went up the steps at the back of the building, and I remember just crying my heart out. But in 1952, I did enter first grade right here. This was a four-room Rosenwald school. Rosenwald schools were built as one rooms, as a one-room school, a two-room, three-room, four-room, or a five-room school. But we had a four-room Rosenwald school, and this was first grade. Second grade was where the kitchen is. Third grade is where the restrooms are, and fourth grade was up here. And between third and fourth grade was a wall that they could raise and lower. And we were so excited about school. And at some point in time in the early years, before we got the Torrance Lytle building, Huntersville Colored School, we would have a Rosenwald Day in honor of Mr. Rosenwald, because we were so beholden as a race of people in the South. We are really beholden to him for his academicness in wanting to help educate little Negro children. So he teamed up with Booker T. Washington. Mr. Rosenwald provided the money, and Mr. Washington provided the different architectural drawings for the different schools. So we are very grateful to both of those men. But anyway, this is where I ended first grade.
And how did you get to school?
You had to walk.
Okay.
And you walked. Let me put a pin in my story and go back to Pottstown.
Okay.
Even though I was born down by Alexandriana, and that was still Huntersville, and we moved in 1950. Our dad was in World War II.
Okay.
And when he came out, he went to school on the GI Bill and built our little four-room house with a little toilet in the back. And so that was where we lived. And so we had to walk the school. And in Pottstown, there were three sections, even though it was one little Pottstown section of Huntersville, where in 1909, the governing body of Huntersville decided that that was where Negroes, descendants of slaves, would be relegated. And this is on the east side of the railroad track. But I have to tell you, too, that where North Campus is, Marenka's campus is now, that is where the slave quarters were after the Civil War. There was always a site just outside of town where Negroes or descendants of slaves could live. So that area is where Central Piedmont's North Campus is now. So as people were able, as descendants of the enslaved were able to move forward, they would find a job, become self-employed or an entrepreneurial-minded person, and move to a place where they didn't have to be a sharecropper, because sharecropping, you only got one third of what you produced. And lots of times that left you and your family wanting.
Yeah.
It was not a good time for descendants of slaves. So Mr. Other Potts was a mulatto, meaning he was almost white, pretty near a mana, as we say, white, and he owned land, and he understood the value of being a landowner. So as the people who had been, men with families who had been living in the quarters, as they became more and more able to find jobs and employment and money, they were able to go to Mr. Other, and he would sell them parcels of his land. So Pottstown, as it was known, had three different sections. We had across the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it was across the hill, most Negroes, descendants of slaves, did not have a car.
Okay.
So you didn't want to cross the railroad track, walk down 115 or the railroad track to get to this site across the hill. So we just called it across the hill, and you went down a steep hill to get here. And then down Holbrook Road, there was farming land, and people had always farmed there. So after my dad got out of the war, he went to school on the GI Bill. He was taught how to lay brick,
mm-hmm.
and they paid him to farm cotton a couple of years. And so when you wanted to go down Holbrook Road, you went down, it was called the Bottom.
Okay.
So we had Pottstown, across the hill, and the Bottom. And even though this was considered Pottstown, it was not really that close in proximity, but it was still part of Pottstown. So I had to walk across the hill and walk to school here every day. Some days they had buses for some of the kids that came from Long Creek or Rich Hatchet Road area,
okay.
Elida Grove 73, Poplar Tent.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them would have to come here too. But remember, you don't know, Poplar Tent had its own Rosenwald School on the site of Columbus Chapel Church.
Oh, okay.
It burned.
Okay.
It burned.
Because I was speaking with someone last night who lived in that area but went to Ada Jenkins.
Okay.
Late in the 60s.
Well, this was probably prior to 53
yeah.
or 54. Okay. Because our Rosenwald School, we attended it until 54. 53, 54, that school year. And so that
So how many grades were here? I mean, you had four rooms, but it was 1 through 4?
And the fifth grade, and I'm not real sure how it worked, but there was a school in Long Creek, and my brother attended it. I'm not real sure
okay.
if it were a Rosenwald school or what it was, but there was a school in Long Creek off Neck Road. And that was where he attended. But this was great. When I was in school, this was grades 1 through 4. 5th and 6th and 7th and 8th were somewhere. I don't really know where.
Mm-hmm.
But in 53, they added another wing to Huntersville Colored School. And in 53, 54, it became Torrance Lytle in honor of the men who had lobbied so hard, the county commissioners of Mecklenburg County, to obtain a high school. Because before, if you wanted to further your education from the sixth grade, you had to attend a boarding school in another city, like Salisbury mm-hmm. or Kannapolis or Concord. And so that's pretty much all I can recall.
Okay.
But grades 1 through 4 were here.
Mm-hmm.
5, 6, 7, and 8 were somewhere. Now let me think. I'm getting ahead of my story.
Okay.
Once in 1937, when they built Huntersville Colored School, the 7th grade was added to Huntersville Colored School. So 5th and 6th grades were somewhere in Long Creek, I think.
Okay.
And when they added the cafeteria portion to Torrance Lytle, the name changed from Huntersville Colored School to Torrance Lytle in honor of Mr. Lytle and Mr. Torrance. And so that was when all the little Rosenwald schools were closed and everybody was moved to Torrance Lytle, which was right out my back door.
Oh, more convenient.
Mm-hmm, more convenient. But we walked to school every day. It was never a problem. You were never afraid. There was only one man who had a dog. That was Mr. Henry Farr. And once you passed him, you were pretty safe to go. People would be on their porches or passing by in their houses and would see you walking, and they would call out to you, speak to you, and so forth and so on.
Did your teachers live in Pottstown as well, or did they?
Now, when I was over here, these teachers lived in Charlotte or somewhere. I don't know where they lived.
They had to come up.
But later on, when I started school at the site where Tarsh Light lives now, Mr. Nguyen and his wife lived there. They lived and died there. They have two daughters still living there, and the home place is still there. And Mr. Jones, F.M. Jones, was our biology teacher, and he taught us about RNA and DNA back then, and it was like, oh gosh, what is that? And you had to have a slide rule to get in and out of your arithmetic. Oh my. And so those were the two teachers who lived there that I can recall. The rest of them drove in from Charlotte.
And so once you got to Torrance Lytle, and you went left before the fourth grade, right?
No,
all the way through here?
In the fourth grade, we walked through the woods over to Tarsh Lytle.
Okay.
And that is when we met kids from Mallet Creek, Derrida, and Charlotte. North of 85, that was considered county. And so that was when we started to meet them.
Mm-hmm. So when you got to Tarsh Lytle, did you join any clubs? What kind of activities did you have?
Oh, we didn't have that many clubs back then. In the fourth grade, you had Glee Club, and now in the upper grades, you may have had some things, but all we had was the Glee Club. If you read the most number of books, you got a certificate or an award, but we just didn't have all the things that people have today. There was no art. Your teacher had to provide the art. Mm-hmm. I remember Miss Adams, who became Miss Thompson, was a science person. She liked science. So we studied birds, and we'd go out and learn the different birds and go take a paper bag and make them and use a pipe stem for the little legs and the feet and everything. But no, the teachers had to be very well-rounded. And I can remember coming over here to the Rosenwald School, and on the wall, on the blackboard, you would have membership, enrollment, attendance, and absence. And there were 30-some students in our class, and there were no discipline problems because your parents relied on you to be good boys and girls so that the teacher could teach you, because education was a very important part of our lives, because we knew that if we didn't get an education, we would be relegated to where we Pottstown forever and ever. Amen. So you were just good.
Yeah. I've heard people, particularly ones who lived in Davidson and went to Ada Jenkins, that the teachers were in the area and that parents knew if you acted up at school before you got home. So the network worked so that
it did.
There
we
was
didn't
reinforcement
have a telephone.
That you.
We didn't have telephones, and our parents worked long hours, and it was not conducive for them to get off from work, because whoever employed them were not concerned about their children. They just needed them to be at work to get what they needed, what they needed that employee to get done for them, to heck with the children and anything else. So we were always taught to be mannerly and good at school, and sometimes I wasn't that good. One time a guy was messing with my cousin, going to beat up on him, and I had an umbrella, and I hit him over the head. I was in the third grade. But he learned not to mess with any of us, because you just didn't do that. And he was a new guy in town. And anyway, to make a long story short, DeWitt learned his lesson. But I got beat. I got spanked at school. I don't think my mom knew. I don't know if they told her or not, but I didn't. But anyway, yep, I got my little legs tore up. And my cousin got hers tore up, too. She didn't do anything. She was just there looking. She came and told me, and that was it. But when I was over here in grades 1 through 4, I was such a mature little lady. I was very mature. So at the end of the day, I was entrusted with the attendance report to take to the big office, Mr. Graham. Mm-hmm.
So did that involve walking across? Was his office in this building? Or?
No, you had to go across the hill. You had to go back to the big school.
Okay.
And go to the office and leave it with the secretary, because that was my job every day. And I love school every day, so very seldom was I absent. But back in those days, you always had the measles, maybe three types of measles, red measles, black measles, and what kind of measles were those? You had three measles.
Yeah, they had something at some point they called 7 day, or there was some fifth disease or something. Yeah.
Well, you had whooping cough, you had three measles,
chicken pox,
and you had chicken pox, and then you had infectago. That was those little sores.
Oh.
We thought they were tomatoes. You ate a lot of tomatoes, you'd get these big sores on your legs. And so I think it was infectago, I'm not real sure, but I think that was it.
So what did you do summers?
We ran and played all day. We went to the plum fields twice a day. We went early in the mornings and late in the afternoons because we'd get the ones ripe. We picked them from the tree. We didn't pick them from the ground. We'd pick them up from the ground. And so we had breakfast at home, but who wanted that? We wanted to go to the plum thickets, rambling in the woods. And so we'd come home because our mom worked at the hospital, and she got off at 1 o'clock, and she had a rest hour. So she would come home and rest between 1 and 3, and we had to be home while she was there. But the minute she left, we were back in the woods rambling again. And we soon learned what trees and bushes to stay away from. And there were never any animals. If we saw, we didn't see any. If they heard us coming, they bamboozled. Yeah. And so we just learned to eat. But there was one thing I thought about the other day. Someplace I was, I saw a locust tree. Do you know what a locust tree is?
I've heard of them, but I wouldn't recognize one.
It's kind of like a something about this size, maybe.
Okay,
12.
It's very thin, 12 inches tall. Or.
And it had a gooey kind of... Oh, it was good. Kind of
like a sap that you could get off
of it?
Eat
it. You could eat it. Had seeds in it.
Oh, okay.
And it was pretty good. What did I say it was?
Locust.
Yeah. I thought that was real neat. And the only place we saw that was at my uncle's house, and he lived back down in the woods along with my grandmother. And so what we thought was great was to go walking through the woods to grandmother's house and Uncle Claude's house. And they had a spring.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to put a pin in the story and tell you here. The people in Pottstown did not have running water until the late 40s or maybe 50s. What happened, we had to get water from the spring. There is a spring when you cross the hill,
mm-hmm.
and that's where a lot of people got their wash water, drinking water, and washed their clothes there. And Miss Daisy Potts and Mr. Otha Potts, the house, where they lived, mm-hmm. they had a pump.
Okay. Yeah.
And someone else had a spring, and they had put a pipe in the spring to get the water to come close to their home. But we didn't have any water, and the good people uptown, the elected officials, did not see the need for people in Pottstown to have running water. So one of the men who lived here, Mr. Alexander Henderson, he had lived in big cities before, mm-hmm. so he knew his way around a lot more than the regular people who were just local. And he was a plasterer. And he continually went uptown to talk with the commissioners or the mayor, whomever, about getting water down Dalewood Drive to Church Street up to where the House of Prayer is. And so he finally got permission from them to go buy the pipe, the galvanized mm-hmm. pipe, and to lay to dig the trenches themselves. And he was able to get that from Camp Green. If you know anything about Charlotte, there's a Camp Green Street, mm-hmm. and it used to be
it was the World War II training camp, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was where it was. And so it had disbanded, that's not the right word, it had closed up shop. And so that's where he got the water, and that's how we got water in Pottstown. And so we really feel alienated from the town. We've always felt that way, because when they wouldn't give you water, I mean, people who won't help you with water, what in the world else do you think they're gonna give you? Air? If they could control that, you wouldn't get it either. But anyway, that's the feeling, that's almost the sentiment of a lot of the people, especially my mother's and dad, my mom and dad's generation. And it's not much different now.
So if your dad was from Cornelius, how did you end up in Pottstown instead of, say, Smithfield, or?
He needed a job, and
he
worked at the hospital.
So
he and my mom met while they were working there.
Mm-hmm.
It was an employing mecca. Everyone in my family has worked there.
Mm-hmm. So what was your mom's maiden name?
Turner. Well, okay. Johnson.
Johnson, okay. So tell me a little bit more about after fourth grade and going to Torrance Seidel. So you went all the way through?
All the way through, yes. And a lot of the young people that I started out with in this little room right here, mm-hmm. we went to school 12 years together.
And how long did you go? I mean, by the time you started school, had they already lengthened the school year so that it was mostly
nine months?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We had a nine-month school year from September to June. Mm-hmm. It ended almost immediately in June. And I don't remember much about Labor Day growing up. I don't remember. That was not a holiday we did much with. That was more of a northern holiday. So we just played. Now the big event for us was the 4th of July.
Okay.
We always got a little something new. Not that we were celebrating America,
mm-hmm.
Our freedom of whatever. We were not doing that, no.
Did you ever celebrate Juneteenth?
We did not celebrate
that I know of.
We did not celebrate Juneteenth until the 90s.
Okay.
Never heard of it. A guy from Africa came and introduced us to it. How about that? Very good, though.
Yeah. So did you have fireworks, or what was the 4th of July?
Fireworks were outlawed. You could not. You could go to jail with fireworks in Mecklenburg County. But some people did it anyway, but we always... I mean, men always had the shotguns,
mm-hmm.
and mostly shotguns because the buckshot would spray.
Right, yeah, didn't make the same noise.
It didn't hurt, you know, it wasn't going to show up over here, you shot it over there. So, no, that's mostly what we did. We had picnics.
Okay.
We had to be industrious because there was no outlet for us. We were relegated to the east side of the railroad track, so we had picnics and camp meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we did this was because we had to have some source of joy, fun, to release the anxiety and tensions that we had. And so we had that.
Mm-hmm.
And people became entrepreneurs. You soon learned that if you were going to have a picnic, you needed somebody to sell fish, hot dogs, and the drinks, or the popcorn,
mm-hmm.
and someone to take the 25-cent photographs, and that's how we did a lot. That's how we accumulated a lot of photographs, because we had a Brownie camera,
mm-hmm.
but that was not until maybe 55.
Okay.
And so you depended on Mr. Stanley to have his little 25-cent picture machine. Oh, and that was such a big event for us. Summers were great. Almost every week you would have a picnic, but then the men had to have an outlet too. So baseball was one of the biggest sports that they had. And a lot of the men played baseball. Some of them were very good, some not so good, but it was an opportunity for us to get out on Saturday. And what was really unique about it, the AME Zion churches,
mm-hmm.
were very instrumental in everywhere there was a little pocket of descendants of slaves, they would have a little AME Zion church, and usually it would have enough land so you could have a ball field.
Hmm.
And so you could play ball there. And we had a ball field here,
mm-hmm.
and so you could always play ball here. There was one over on Church Street, it's Huntersville AME Zion.
Okay.
And you had another one at Catawba Presbyterian, they had a ball field. You had one at Columbus Chapel, they had a ball field. And so when you played ball, you had a picnic. And so it was really like a rallying cry for all the people to come, and you would see your friends during the summer. So that was really big doings.
So the teams, because I just got a photograph recently from Carolyn Mundy, who grew up in the Davidson area, and she had an uncle who was on an early African-American.
I bet his name was Clifford Caldwell.
Yeah.
My dad's brother.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't. So you're related to Carolyn?
See, they had his mom had two different husbands.
Okay.
Her first husband was a Mundy.
Okay.
But she died so young and left a lot of children. Well, Jeffro, Aunt Sis, James, my dad, and Clifford. And so Jeffro is a Monday. And so Clifford was their younger brother.
Okay.
And so he played ball too, yeah, I remember. All of them played ball, though. Yeah. I mean, that was a sport of choice, like football is now.
Yeah. Or basketball.
It was basketball. Yeah. Baseball was it, number one.
So they formed just teams around
towns, every town. Yeah. And then, say, for instance, you had the local team. The local Cornelius team would play the local Huntersville team, the local Long Creek team. It was kind of like what we have now, except it wasn't the National Football League.
Yeah.
It was just towns.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, a lot of them still have these little leagues.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they were, leagues.
Yeah. So where did you go to church?
Oh, now my church, I had two different churches. Well, let me tell you a little bit about this first.
Mm-hmm.
We had Bible school during the summer, and St. Philip's was right here, Huntersville, Ami Zion. We called it Little Mission,
mm-hmm.
and then the House of Prayer never participated. And then we had New Friendship, used to be Huntersville Presbyterian Colored Church, and then we had Chapel Hill Missionary Baptist Church down on Huntersville Mount Holly Road.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the most part, people would take us to church. Now, Miss Emma Sloan would take us to New Friendship, but Huntersville Presbyterian.
Mm-hmm.
And then my great, 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 great uncle was one of the founders of Huntersville Ami Zion Church, Little Mission.
Mm-hmm.
And so my grandmother and some of her children are buried there. But growing up, we became attached to Chapel Hill Missionary Baptist Church because we lived up on Church Street. And Miss Lily Berry was one of the members of Chapel Hill, and Chapel Hill had a bus, and the bus was at Miss Lily's house, so we could just catch the bus and go to Chapel Hill. And you know, you always want to ride somewhere, because our family didn't have a car until 58 or 59, I can't remember when, but anyway, we didn't get a car till like then. So we enjoyed riding the bus. So that was my church of choice. And I attended up until 78, but now I'm a member of Mount Carmel Baptist Church in Charlotte. But my church of choice in Huntersville is Huntersville Ami Zion. That's the church of my ancestors, that's what I call it.
So, and did you have choir and Wednesday night meetings, or how much social life did the church include?
The church, Chapel Hill usually had a prayer meeting and a revival in the summer, spring and fall. And sometimes we got to go because we could ride the bus because our family didn't have a car. And so that was basically it. But we did, I don't want to say this, we would go to the House of Prayer and look in the window because they had a band. They always had a guitar or a band. And the music was so, it was such a draw, but we couldn't attend because we were children and our parents were not members and they were not interested in becoming a member. So we could not just go in kind of like you do now.
Yeah, huh, I didn't know that.
Well, now if you want to go to the House of Prayer, you just go to the House of Prayer. But as children, you could not do that. No, you had to have your parents' permission to attend the House of Prayer. And so we didn't have our parents' permission, so we stood and listened, kind of close enough to hear, but far enough to run home.
And what about shopping, when you did shop or groceries?
Oh,
were there any little stores
go
here? Because you mentioned entrepreneurs, so were there black businesses that you could?
Oh, we had two stores, Cheryl's Grocery. And they provided most of what the people needed. But then you had something called Young Blood. It was where the Rock store was. You know where it is, right below North? And they moved the front of it when they moved the road and put the car lots there. It was called the Rock store, but it was owned by the Young Blood family.
Okay.
And so we could shop there for groceries. And then there was another one. God, what was the name of that place? There was another store almost to 21, but we didn't shop there much because it was too far and we didn't have a car. We had to shop local pretty much.
Mm-hmm. And I presume you had a family garden? Or did you? Was your family, did you plant vegetables?
Not really. No. We would. My mom sometimes would have a tomato plant, mm-hmm. not a big garden. But one year, right after my dad got out of World War II, when they paid him to go to school and grow cotton, we planted everything. Mm-hmm. Potatoes, sweet potatoes, peanuts, watermelons, and all that. But that was just
that one,
his.
Where did he go to school?
He went to Cornelius,
okay.
whatever was up there. I think the school he went to is under Lake Norman.
Okay.
Caldwell.
But when he did the GI Bill?
Down at the quartermaster down in Charlotte at where Old Eckert's is.
Okay.
Was, yeah,
okay.
right there.
Because I wondered if he got to go to Johnson C. Smith or CBCC or if there was, but it
he
was
a little.
He was an Army program or a military mm-hmm. program that he went through.
Yes. With a family, he couldn't, I mean, it wasn't something that he really could have done. He was more rural, you know, people who went to, if you lived in Charlotte, you may know you wanted to go to college, but if you were rural and grew up on a farm, you knew you just needed a job. So that was not in the cloud, in his future. But he was a very smart person.
Mm-hmm. So now back to you, so you're at, you're in high school now,
mm-hmm.
so there are more clubs, more opportunities, and are you working part-time?
No, there was nothing to do. You couldn't get a job. No, Lord goodness, no. You could be black, be a Negro, and get a job. That was unheard of. The only thing you could do was work in somebody's kitchen.
Okay.
Pick cotton. Every year this time in the fall, there was a couple who lived down Holbrook Road,
mm-hmm.
and every year they would stop at the corner of Central and Holbrook and pick us up and let us ride on the back of a truck to the bottom, and we would shell peas, a half a bushel for 50 cents and a bushel for a dollar. That was how we made our money, but you could do a lot with that.
Yeah.
But our dad gave us a quarter allowance every week, so we thought we were living large.
So what did, so high school years?
There was nothing much to do. We had sock hops. Oh, Lord, let's see.
Choirs and any athletics? I mean, was that?
Oh, well, the football, baseball. I don't know if we had a baseball team. Football and basketball, I do know.
And I guess at that time period, the women really didn't have much in the way of athletics.
Now, the women had a basketball.
Oh, you had a basketball team, okay.
And then we had, but I don't know if we had it then. I know I was not athletic. I was not musically inclined. I couldn't draw. No, I wasn't part of that. Whenever I learned to take shorthand, I liked that. I liked the clerical end of stuff, and I liked working in the library. So I became a library assistant, and in high school, my friend and I, you may know, remember Ethel Davis, she was in Cornelius.
Mm-hmm.
We were secretaries to the assistant principal the last year we were in school, 63-64.
Okay. And outside of the school, was there any library that you had access to here? I mean, you had to drive, I would assume.
Well, no, we could walk uptown to the little library that was there. But I'm just going to tell you, I don't remember. In high school, I don't remember going in high school. I think everything was so segregated, you just didn't go. But then maybe closer to 64, 65, you could go to the library. But before then, I don't think we could go.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I would be surprised. And so after high school?
Okay, after high school, I was given a scholarship to Southeastern Business College in Durham. And I thought that by going to a two-year school, I would make as much money as people did going to a four-year school. Wrong. That did not work. But anyway, I did go to Southeastern Business College in Durham. Good experience, but I could see that was not really what I needed because it was kind of I could just see that that wasn't what I really needed.
It was
needed.
Mostly secretarial?
Yes.
And I'm presuming it was an African-American college?
Yes.
That was,
yeah. Yeah. Right down the street from North Carolina Central.
Mm-hmm.
And so I let everybody know that I was coming home after the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and I applied to and was accepted at Johnson C. Smith.
Okay.
And I didn't go because Miss Esther Johnson, I had worked as a library helper for her while I was in high school, all those 4 years. High school was 9th, 10th, and 11th grade. And so when I went, when I returned home from Durham, I went over to the school. I was always over to the school. Everybody knew me. And I was telling Miss Johnson that I'd come home to go to Johnson C. Smith because I was not going back to Southeastern. It just wasn't what it was cracked up to be. It was too tiny. You know what I'm saying? It was just didn't fit what I thought.
Yeah.
And so, believe it or not, there was an opening at the school. Back then, if anybody got pregnant in the school, teacher, whoever, you lost your job. So the said secretary, the head secretary, was expecting and was going to lose her job. And so Miss Johnson's secretary, who was Eva Reed, I moved up to the school secretary, and Miss Johnson asked me if I would like to work for her, and I said, sure. So she and Mr. Graham talked about it, and they said yes. So I went down to the Board of Education with my little hat, my little gloves, and I was hired. So January 2, 1965, I was back at Torrance Lytle as a staff member after having graduated 6 months before.
What was that like?
It was, I went to school, I worked, it was just school all the time. It was never like I graduated or anything, it was just I always went to school. And I still miss it, going to school every fall.
Well, what did you, that, you know, you must have known the seniors that year,
okay.
So they knew you.
Mm-hmm. The only thing they had to do was call me Miss Caldwell or Betty if they were close by, and I didn't tell them and not to. Mm-mm. It was just a real good experience. And it was not until 2013 that I thought they must have really had a good opinion of me. Because I'd never thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just, that's what they're saying. Yeah. So it was really quite shocking that many years later to discover. And I tell you when it was in 2013 because I was reliving, I was getting ready to relive all the things that led up to my graduation,
mm-hmm.
because I never did get to Washington in 63, but I did go in 2013, and it was just a time to reflect.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to thinking about that, and I thought, wow, you know, that says something.
Now, why would you have gone to Washington in 63? Did the school go, or
no,
that was,
that was
a
the March on
Washington.
Washington.
Yeah, okay, so you just wanted to be part of that.
But I don't remember it taking place. I don't remember the hoopla, the fanfare of it. But I remember I was working in some white woman's home with two little girls that were all over me when that was on TV, and that was my experience. I didn't know what to make of it. So I did want to be there 50 years later to get a better understanding of all of what had transpired.
So up in, you know, in this community, you're working at the school after you graduated, were you aware of the sit-ins in Charlotte, the sit-ins in Greensboro?
Oh yeah, I was ready. I was ready.
Oh.
I was sitting on the edge of my seat, and I had been waiting and waiting and waiting because I love history. So I read and got DVDs of the Martin Luther King and everything, and I was so sad that I did not have an opportunity to participate in what they were doing at that time. But since then, I've had an opportunity to do some things. And one, there was a lady in Montgomery who typed up all those flyers to tell the people, don't ride the bus on Monday. And I thought, oh, I want to do that. I have typed so much, I have.
Your carpal tunnel?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I have been hired as a organizer. I worked for Helping Empower Local People.
Great. Yeah.
As an organizer, I don't know how good I did, but at least I had the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting to see. And we're still light years away from being treated with an equal And I don't know if we ever will.
So what happened to you when Torrance Slidell, when they closed it down and sent people to North?
Oh, I worked there. I was working there.
You worked at North?
No. Listen, did you see my face? I am still, I'm just not there yet. I am so glad I didn't have to go to school with white folk. I just don't know what in the world to say, because having been rooted and grounded at Torrance Slidell, when you left there, you could face anybody, anywhere, going or coming. You didn't have any reservations, hesitation about who you were, what you were capable of, or anything. You just knew you were there. And so I don't have that. And I still, when I'm trying to give directions, I still tell people up by the white folks' school, because that's kind of like imprinted.
But what was it like at Torrance Slidell? You're working as a secretary, right, when integration happens?
The school closed in 66.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I had to help pack up everything. We thought it was going to be the best thing since Kentucky Fried Chicken, but it really has devastated our community to a certain degree. Whites just don't have the understanding, they don't have it in their DNA to understand that this little black boy who's got the hippie, hippie, hoppy, hop, he is not overactive. He just has a lot of pent-up energy. He does not need to be on Ritalin. You just need to find something to challenge him and keep him challenged. And I know you can't do that with all these kids in the classroom now, but we had 35 in here, and everybody was working, you just didn't have these people who were not conforming to an education setting.
When you had smaller schools, you knew everybody, and there was, I think when you get larger schools, it's really hard. You start warehousing the kids rather than teaching them.
Frankly, I wouldn't know how to teach a bunch of white kids, because their experiences are so vastly different from mine. White people cannot really teach us unless you have some empathy and understanding, because you don't know what my life is like. You've been around the world, you probably traveled to and fro and done all this stuff, so you can't understand why I can't see that this is a funny looking, a newfangled cupcake.
Mm-hmm.
My cupcakes always had, you just had a cupcake.
Mm-hmm.
But now here you got a cupcake with a icing on it and a cherry. Mm-hmm. Like, what in the world is that? That's a cupcake, they need time to assimilate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just not happening.
Yeah. You don't have the same cultural references.
Mm-hmm.
It can be really hard to.
It is. And most people nowadays, they go into teaching to reach, to get up on the ladder. And so that was it. But at Torrance Slidell, everybody was there. You didn't have the TV telling you that if you didn't have Nike shoes, you weren't there.
Although, what was it? What was the outfit you most wanted in high school? What would have been the cool?
I wanted two pairs of shoes, not one pair. And every time they tore up, you got another pair. I wanted two.
And you want saddle shoes or pumps, or what was the, do you remember what kind, or just two?
Well, let's see. It didn't matter. At some point, at one point in the eighth grade, boots were popular. And I wanted a pair of boots. And I got those boots, and you had to polish them, but they look real like cooler bags. It's like, I shouldn't have gotten them. I should have got something that was a little more easier to tend to. But anyway, I had to wear them for Christmas and got some more or something. But there were no style setters, no trend setters. We didn't have I was fat, so I didn't fit in with the normal group of people. What I liked was, I liked makeup at that time. But then when I saw the girls from Davison and they put the stuff around their eyes, I didn't like that. Not for me, but for them it was okay. But not for me. I liked the lipstick and the high heels and the stockings. But I didn't want that around my eyes. So no, we didn't really have trendsetters. And I'm not a copycat person. I do my own thing. So.
So did you have to take home ec classes?
Oh,
did
we
you have to
did.
Learn to sew? And was it divided up when I was in school? Still, the women took home ec and the guys took shop and you couldn't.
Well, they were in two different buildings. So it was never in close proximity. And no boy wanted to take home ec, so that was good. And no girl wanted to take shop, so that was good. So you didn't have issues, yeah. But we had to make a dress, and I enjoyed that. I don't know where my dress is. I tried to keep it forever and ever, but I don't know where it is now.
I had an apron. I didn't keep it. Actually, I did make a dress, too. I got to be a good sewer later, but.
But I'm glad it did because it helped me because every now and then I'll try and sew some. And I can sew enough to make a garment without a sewing machine, just make it by hand.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I've done that, but it was a good experience. But I liked school. I liked the sock hops. And Kilgo's Canteen, are you a local person?
Mm-mm. I've been here since 94, so I know where the teen canteen was in Davidson, but I don't know.
Well, Kilgo's Canteen was a program on TV.
Oh, okay.
And it was like
American Bandstand?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. What was his name?
Dick Clark.
Dick Clark. And so it was a local show with Kilgo's Canteen. And I never got to go because they said I was fat. And you'd be surprised at some of the stuff the teachers could say, oh, they'd be ostracized sure enough today. My fifth grade teacher, and I still can't carry a tune, she said, don't you sing, you just work your mouth. And one of the teachers, the physical ed teacher, is the one who would not select me to go dance on Kilgo's Canteen. And you know, I still have a little resentment on that, about that, but anyway, you live and learn, so I knew that I was fat. And chubby, and so there were certain things that chubby people just didn't do. And you know, you didn't, to save yourself the embarrassment, not maybe so much the embarrassment, but to keep from being provoked and retaliating or something, you just didn't do it. So I didn't sing, I didn't dance, I couldn't draw. So that wasn't my idea.
Excuse me.
The only thing I liked to do, when Perry Mason came on TV and I saw Della, mm-hmm. I wanted to be a secretary. And that was what I got to be. And so I enjoyed my work and my career.
So you were at Torrance Lytle. Torrance Lytle closes in 66. Where do you become a secretary next?
Well, I didn't become a secretary then. What happened, everybody who worked at Torrance Lytle had to be rehired. You had to apply for a job, mm-hmm. which was terrible. It was just awful. And if Mr. Grimm put a bad mouth on you, you were in trouble. That did not happen to me, but I think it happened to a few of the people. And I guess not knowing, he had to be as honest as he could, you know, so he could live with himself. But now you just give everybody A and let them go on and let them sink and swim on their own merit. Don't you help them along? And so, anyway, Ms. Johnson used to love to tell that I was one of the first people to be hired in the new integration system, and I was hired at Library Technical Services. That's where we processed the books for the schools, and I stayed there.
And was that down in Charlotte?
It was in Charlotte. Oh, gosh, it was over at Oakhurst School, and I lived in Huntersville.
Oh, my goodness.
But
and the roads weren't that good back then.
It were.
There
weren't not that much traffic.
Okay.
Everything was two-lane.
Mm-hmm.
But my uncle helped me get a car. And so I had a car. When did I get a car? Let's see, wait. It was a 64 Malibu. I got it in 65 when the school year was starting, 65, 66. And we did not know then that the school was going to close. But anyway, I had my little car. And so I enrolled at Central Piedmont. I love going to Central Piedmont. Oh, I loved it, loved it, loved it. And I thought I was so grown driving into Charlotte and everything, can't drive at night now, duh.
When did Central Piedmont integrate?
It must have integrated in 63 because all the, let me see how that went. I used to know, but I can't remember everything now. I graduated in 64 and I started in 65 in September. It was already in place in 65.
Okay.
So I think it must have been 63.
Okay.
Yeah, because It was a school on Batesford Road, and Bonnie Cohn or somebody said, we are not going to have two separate schools. We're going to have one. So it was Central Piedmont.
So what did you take at Central Piedmont?
Executive secretarial.
Now, were you working at the same time? Could you take
the
classes?
At the same time. Mm-hmm. I worked at Library Technical Services. And this is when Vietnam was going on.
Okay.
And, well, first of all, I had to get the job. We closed, let me go back. I went to work at Library Technical Services on June 13, 1966. And the reason I remember, it was Judy's birthday, one of the girls' birthday. So I went to work, and they were having a party. I thought that was really neat. Mm-hmm. And I really liked those white women, because I hadn't been in close proximity in a working relationship with whites ever.
Yeah.
And so it was such a wonderful experience, very good. Everybody had his best foot forward. And so it worked real well. And then, let's see, I worked at Library Technical Services. It was over at Oakhurst. And everybody was, you didn't see white, you didn't see black. You saw Judy, Diane, Nancy, Miss Skinner. You saw people, and that was good. And then after that, we had to move from Oakhurst to, near where the Observer, Isabella White.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked out good. It was just a good experience. And all the time I was taking all these classes, I still wanted to work with education. Mm-hmm. And so in 60, what, Lord, geez, you know, you think you're going to remember, but you can't.
Yeah.
Anyway, I applied for a job at the central office as secretary to Head Start.
Okay.
And that went well. I got that job. But in 1965, that summer, I worked at Torrance Light. We had a Head Start program.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked at the first Head Start program. And I've got a picture of those little kids. They are so sweet. And then that fall, I went to Central Piedmont. I already had my car.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it must have been about 60, no, 70. 73, no, it wasn't 73. Must have been 71 or 72 that I went to work for Head Start. Nope, that's not right. Hold on, let me give you dates, because let's see. I moved to Charlotte. Let me see. Oh, I can't get it. I got a roommate, met a girl at Central Piedmont.
Mm-hmm.
She was from Nebo in the mountains. They said we sound alike. I thought, oh, Lord, no, we don't. and we became roommates, and that had to be in 71.
So that would put you working with the Library Technical Services about 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And then, get that clear in my head. But anyway, at some point, I went to work for Head Start and worked at the central office.
Mm-hmm.
And that next year, I went to work for ESEA, Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965. And then, you know, everything keeps changing. And then I started to work all in the same building, curriculum. I became a curriculum secretary and helping teachers work with them over Seversville, and then back to the Ed Center in 73 when Chernobyl was going on, I think.
Okay.
And I worked there until 91, and in 91, Harvey Sada, well, before, you got all the politics that they play with in these places. And they wanted my boss at the time to fire someone who'd been there for years and done nothing. And so she said, I won't do it. I won't fire her. So she went home and retired. And nobody fired her. And so then they got Harvey Sada off. And he worked, he got his job very underhanded. And that was in, in the 90s, 91, my job. Oh, it must have been 88 or 89. And he got the job, and he wasn't a good steward of his job. So they closed our department, the Director of Instruction. And it closed in June 30th, and it opened up September 1. You know, hired new people, and that's how you got rid of folk. So that's how come I ended up at Davidson, because my job had ended. And I was picked up by, you've got to apply again, mm-hmm. by Emily Stevenson Green over at Irwin Avenue. Mm-hmm. She was the monster person. She was not a good principal at all. And you don't pass judgment, but her people skills, she liked any people skills. She had none.
It happens.
Zero. And so we were both writing memos on each other. And I knew that the person with the most authority would soon win, because that's just how it is. And so one day we were having a fire drill, and personnel called me and asked me if I'd take a job at Davidson, and I said yes. And by the time I came back from the fire drill, I was moved. And that was kind of sort of okay, but I wasn't welcomed at Davidson either, because they had another lady that they had groomed for the position, one of the parents. And so it was a little unsettling for me, but what did I care? These people would not have wanted me anyway.
So this would have been Davidson Elementary, not the middle school at Davidson.
Elementary.
Yeah.
But we were at the old building.
Okay, right.
And so, you don't want me to do anything, fine. That's okay for me. Because I was refurbishing my retirement home, so that gave me plenty of time to think. Mm-hmm. Because growing up black, you just don't become, you become desensitized to white people's, what word am I looking for? Looking down their noses at you. I mean, it's just like, so, I mean, you know, you don't even, so. And so it just didn't bother me, because when I went home, I was the construction boss at my house. And so that went well. And finally, they started to give me something to do, which was fine with me. Mm-hmm. And but then there would be days when the secretary would come in, and she was going to prove to me she could do it all. And I thought, be my guest, because it's a lot of work in the school.
Yeah.
It's just, I'd go in some days, when she was sharing responsibilities, I'd have a cup of coffee when I went in, and it was still there when I went out. I had a sweater in my desk drawer I never got to put on, because it was
so crazy busy.
Mm-hmm. And so that was it. So I was really glad to retire. They didn't know I was retiring, but anyway, I went on a Thursday and let them know I was retiring that Friday. That was the end of that school. And so that worked for me. And I've had other jobs. Because I wanted to try a lot of new things. When I left Davidson, I went to Mooresville and got my CNA license. I didn't like that so hot, because I didn't like doing those personal things for people. And some were grateful, and some were like, I thought, okay, I understand that. And then too, sometimes the people, your supervisors, they kind of had a disdain for you, and sometimes your peers they formed an opinion that was unjust, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to let them have this. I don't really need the frustration. So I worked as a church secretary and just did little things, and as time passed, Huntersville got more and more stuff. We got a bowling lane, got Kohl's, and I worked there, worked at Friendly's.
Okay.
Just did little things, just trying them out.
So how did you get involved with the project to save the Torrance Lytle building?
Oh, the idea had been going around for years and years that it was going to be demolished, but you know, I really can't even remember.
Mm-hmm. So did you have a reunion group? Because again, last night I was talking to Odell Black, and he talked about it. That was in 2013 that he and a friend got together and started doing a reunion group for the class of 1965 that they had never really gotten together.
Not the class of 65.
Yeah.
65 had many reunions, so I don't know what I can't say. But let me see. I've always had my hands in the history of this stuff, so I don't know, but I remember working with the Historic Landmarks Commission. I just can't remember.
Okay. So it's gone way back in time that you've been. And so in your did your class have reunions? I mean.
Yes. We had our first reunion in 10 years after we graduated. That's the class of 64.
And did the classes do their own reunions? I mean, is there ever an all school? When did you start having all school reunions? Or do you have those very often?
The blue and gold dance. Yeah. I think this may have been there. If it's not the 40th year, okay. It may be something close to that. I'm not real sure.
Do most people do the class rather than the whole school
thing?
We do
the class. Now, I'm told by people that the class of 64 mm-hmm. was the first group to start with their class reunions.
Okay.
And we did one in 74. We had a luau. Mm-hmm. We had a dance with a band. Mm-hmm. And we had the luau up on Lake Norman. And we had a dance down at the hotel, that Hope Haven or something other on Tryon Street now. Mm-hmm. And that was what we did. And every year pretty much since then, we've had at least a 10-year reunion.
Have you ever been on the organizing committee for those?
I was on the organizing committee for the first one. But our class had cliques, and I'm not a clique person. And cliques can really cause a lot of other people to go along to get along. So I'm like the third person on two's company and three's a crowd with the class of 64. I don't want to be involved in a cliquey situation.
Did your class scatter much?
Yeah.
Moved to other states? And
no, a lot of them died.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of them chose not to participate. And I wanted to have a real big doings for the 50th. Mm-hmm. But the people in charge of the class of 64 didn't want to do it. So I had my own big, I thought it was big, my own big event for my 50th graduation anniversary. And I was able to rent the gym. Mm-hmm. And I could hardly believe it because I did it at last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady at the town hall said, I don't know if it's available. The same day, like the 4th of June, 50 years later, and it was like, it's available, we'll do it. And out of all the people that I invited, only about 10 or 11 came. And I thought, well, okay, you missed a real good invite.
Do you visit any of the other reunions?
I do. But I don't attend the $40 alumni dance, because that's a lot for me. It really is. Sometimes when I'm working and making $8-$9 an hour, I have to look at that and I said, I can't justify that. Plus it's at night now and I can't drive at night, so I haven't been going. But I did go to the freebie stuff they have for free, I'll go. But that's it. But I always go to attend the class of 65. They don't tend to have the clique that the class of 64 had, and our clique is still clicking.
Oh. I'm going to look at my list here. So you've already said a whole lot here, but is there anything that you would want people to know about your experience? Either how things have changed over time here or just, you know, somebody's new to this area. What should they know?
What should they know is that I've just written a book, that it's in the publishers. Mm-hmm. And it's Historic Pottstown Families. And the Historic Pottstown Families, they're in stories and pictures. And it's important to know that this area should not gentrify. The blacks should not have to be removed in order to let it live. The history of this area is really important because there's no history in Huntersville. Everything important and historic in Huntersville is on the east side of the railroad track. They try to play at making Main Street historic, and it is kind of because it's alongside of the railroad track. But other than they tore down the thing where you buy tickets.
The depot station.
But it's the Beale Hill and Pottstown that's important, that's historic. They don't want to hear it, but I'm here in my lifetime to do what I can to get at least Pottstown declared historic. And, the Mill Hill. Because if the Mill Hill had not been here all these years, there would not be any Huntersville.
Mm-hmm. It was the economy.
Yeah, and you really need to look at your roots. Don't try to find a new root. Go to the end of the earth to find the roots you already got. But we've got new people to the area who don't see that, and they want to bring what they had there here, and which is not always bad, but see what you got here. And so, I don't know, but I do want to be sure that I do all I can to keep Pottstown from gentrifying. And I think it would be wonderful if people would coexist, let your neighbor live pretty much the way he wants to live. It is in standard, if he's keeping with all the codes. Mm-hmm. And if he's not, having brought up to par or do whatever is done with people who are not living up to code. But that's my main thing, just to keep my school alive. We don't have many vestiges of what was important and dear to people of color, descendants of slaves. And it's real important to me that we fight, go down fighting to preserve it.
Thank you.